The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. Let's start with an article from AARP, The Bulletin. And this is a Q&A with Jack Nicklaus. These kids want my advice. I feel very flattered and humbled by that. Golf legend Jack Nicklaus, 84, on what keeps him connected to the game and how life is so much more today. If the 18-year-old Jack Nicklaus could see where his 84-year-old self ended up, what would astonish him more? 18 major golf championships or 24 grandchildren? I don't know about astonished, but I would be flabbergasted by either one of those numbers. Question. You've said you believe you could have won more tournaments, but you prioritized family time. Do you think that's a value today's PGA Tour players share? Answer. Some do. Could my record have been better? Absolutely. But my family would have suffered for it. As a result, I would have suffered. I was fortunate to have a good balance. Is it more difficult for an elite professional athlete to come to terms with aging? Answer, I didn't have any problems with it. When your time to compete is up, your time to compete is up. Fortunately, in golf, you can compete much longer on the Senior Tour, now the PGA Champions Tour. I was able to compete reasonably well into my early 60s. How are you staying healthy and focused? I keep myself busy doing a lot of work with our Nicklaus Children's Health Care Foundation. We probably do about 30 events a year. I do speeches and public appearances. I'm still designing golf courses. Physically, I do my set of exercises twice a day, so I stay active. You were a successful all-around athlete. Was that crucial to your golf success? When I started out, I played all the sports I could until I quit to play only golf. But even then, I played in a rec basketball league until I was about 40. Then I kept active by being involved with my kids. If they played football, I would get to their football practices a lot. I would throw to receivers. I would kick with the punters. For basketball, I used to scrimmage with the kids. For baseball, I used to pitch batting practice. I just like all sports, but I don't think I was ever a gym rat. I just kept myself in condition for golf by playing other sports. You weren't playing much golf for a time. Has your relationship with the game changed? I don't play at all now. I haven't hit a golf shot since the traditional opening tee shot in Augusta National to kick off the Masters in April 2023. Not one. Putting or otherwise. My relationship with the game is now talking to the younger players. Most young people don't want to listen to their father or grandfather, but these kids want my advice. I feel very flattered. That keeps me active in the game. For a while, you were consistently linked with Tiger Woods. Has your relationship with him evolved through the years? I haven't spent a lot of time with Tiger. He's something like 35 years younger than I am, so we don't have a close bond as two people. But I like Tiger. Whenever there's an issue in the game of golf, one of us will call the other. We both have the same interests and want to do what's best for the game of golf, as it relates to today's issues. He's got a good head on his shoulders as to what's good for the game and what's not, and I think today's players look up to him for that. Your charity work focuses on children's health. How did you and your wife, Barbara, get involved with that cause? A children's hospital saved my daughter's life when she was less than a year old. When the opportunity came for my wife and I to get involved with charities, we decided to start a foundation to improve children's health care. I spent most of my time now working with Barbara on the foundation and with the children's hospitals. Barbara is really good at it, and I learn a lot from her. Your philanthropic efforts are extended family affairs with children and grandchildren participating, right? We just set out to start a little foundation. Now it's grown to the point that it needs more support. We're just blessed that our kids see the same need that we do. Then the grandkids came along and get involved. It's fantastic. Back to golf for a minute. Who is the greatest professional golfer of all time? I refuse to answer that question on the grounds that I couldn't answer it honestly. If you want to take me out of the equation, maybe I could answer it. I think you just answered the question. And this interview was by John Lewinsky. Now, more on the cover story on this AARP, The Bulletin. This article, A Spy Inside the Dark Web. He watches as scams are born and helps to shut them down. David Maiman watches for digital criminals from his desk at Georgia State University. And this article is by Sari Horar. The entrepreneur advises his business online by way of rapping. I got the key right here. I got the time right here, he sings. Everywhere, 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 everywhere. The services he's selling, stealing checks, credit cards, and personal information from U.S. Postal Service mailboxes using a stolen arrow key of the type used by postal workers to access locked mailboxes. Elsewhere, in an encrypted social media chat group, a criminal posts screenshots of a hacked Bank of America checking account that's up for sale. The account balance is $3,884. The owner's full name, bank account number, phone number, address, and access to her payment app are all part of the deal, all for $3. Welcome to the dark web. These are just a few of the scenes observed on a recent day by criminologist David Maiman as he tapped out a few keystrokes on his laptop and slipped into this hidden criminal world. This ecosystem is exploding, says Maiman, whose evidence-based cybersecurity research group at Georgia State University in Atlanta spies on crooks who steal billions of dollars a year. We're talking about enormous networks and organized criminal groups with sophisticated operations. In the nefarious corners of the Internet, criminals talk to each other with complete anonymity. Here, in the dark web, Maiman's super sleuths see it all, from stacks of stolen, washed, and forged checks to pilfered driver's licenses and purloined health insurance cards sold from one scammer to another. The personal identification information is often more valuable than the cash they can steal. Maiman says they can open new bank accounts, get fake driver's licenses, buy guns. The stolen identity opens the door to any kind of financial activity, he says. The dark web is a group of hidden sites that can be accessed only with a special web browser that keeps users' identities anonymous. You can't get there via a Google search, for instance. Users can't be traced, making the dark web attractive for criminals selling their stolen goods and illegal services. Maiman and his group have watched romance scammers using smartphone technology to alter their faces as they woo unsuspecting victims, observed crooks luring newcomers into the business with videos of thick wads of cash, and viewed homemade videos of criminals boasting about their successes. In one mysterious video the team found last fall, a man in a black and silver mask assures his clients he'll be back in business soon. That business, Maiman says, mainly involves defrauding banks. Maiman's mission? To spot emerging trends so law enforcement and financial institutions can take action and consumers can protect themselves. To really stop it, you need to connect the dots by being out there with the criminals, understanding what they're doing, he says. His group was among the first to sound the alarm. In 2021, about the avalanche of check washing scams across the U.S. perpetrated by criminals who loot mailboxes and rewrite stolen checks. The scam costs Americans an estimated $815 million annually and continues unabated. His team saw hundreds of stolen checks for sale online and on encrypted social media apps. David kept raising red flags, says Frank McKenna, chief fraud specialist for the fraud detection company Point Predictive. He put the whole story of check washing together. Maiman's team spots emerging scam trends and how criminals outsmart detection systems. David's research not only showcases how bad actors are scaling up fraud activity, but also provides insight into the root causes of fraud, said Karen Boyer, director of fraud intelligence, prevention, and detection for M&T Bank. The criminals he targets aren't pleased. After Maiman was seen in media reports about check washing scams, someone opened a bank account using his personal information and sent a debit card to his home addressed as a warning. It was scary, he said. The university sent a police officer for a month to make sure we were safe. Maiman has a PhD in sociology, but was uninspired by work in that field. I wanted to quit until a colleague suggested studying cybercrime, he said. Nobody was doing meaningful research. We can study crime as it happens and make a difference. Every day is surprising and amazing. The next section in this article is A Day in the Life of a Fraud Fighter. Volunteers at the AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline do what they can to aid victims. And here's a picture of volunteer Dan Smith. Dan Smith, 74, a soft-spoken retired lawyer, is on the phone at the AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline office in Denver on a recent Tuesday morning, speaking with Becky, who tells him she lost $16,000 in a PayPal imposter scam. She doesn't know what to do next and doesn't want her husband to find out. I'm sick to my stomach, she says, explaining how it began with an email about a suspicious charge. To dispute it, she was told she needed to fill out an online form. When she did, the scammers were able to take over her computer. Stupid me, thinking people are honest. Smith reassures her that she is most certainly not stupid and sadly not alone in falling victim. He goes on to explain how to protect herself from further loss, including getting her computer cleared of malware and requesting a new bank account number and password. Call us anytime, he adds, before their 15-minute call ends. Smith is a longtime volunteer for the free AARP helpline, one of the largest operations of its kind in America. It's staffed with volunteers who listen to victim stories, help them report crimes, find financial or psychological counseling, and more. Along with regulars like Smith, who come to the downtown Denver headquarters, there are more than 160 volunteers around the country who do the work remotely. Led by Amy Nofsinger, AARP's Director of Fraud Victim Support, the team responds to about 150 calls each day. All are first screened by a trained triage team, which passes to the helpline volunteers, the ones needing urgent help. The helpline team is housed in a nondescript downtown building where volunteers set up in individual offices. Sometimes they'll poke their heads out to get advice from a fellow volunteer or Nofsinger, who keeps in her office a blue stuffed llama available for hugs when anyone gets overwhelmed by a tragic story. On a recent day, Smith's laptop screen was open to a list of scam victims needing callbacks. The hardest calls are the ones where someone lost everything, he says, and that is not uncommon. The AARP Fraud Helpline has operated for a decade, thanks to people willing to give their time. No specific background is needed to volunteer, though many have had careers in law enforcement. All receive at least 20 hours of training before handling calls. On this day, the Denver office volunteers will speak to about 40 fraud victims, among them a caller reporting that he had paid $17,000 through a bank transfer for a car listed on a website that turned out to be bogus. A Mississippi man who spent $1,000 in Apple gift cards to pay for a puppy advertised online. The seller kept adding fees. "Now I don't have enough money to pay my medical bills," he tells a volunteer. A woman whose father has dementia and is being contacted by fake debt collectors. He has given them $70,000. In the afternoon, Margaret Locke, a no-nonsense 62-year-old, who has had a long career as an attorney, speaks with a 65-year-old man named Donald, who says someone called to tell him he had won $10 million and a Mercedes from Publishers Clearing House. He didn't have to pay anything. All he needed to do was set up a new savings account where winnings could be deposited. Donald did so, but realized it was a scam when asked for the PIN to his account. "I gave him too much of my information, including my Social Security number," Donald says. "Did you close the bank account?" Locke asks. He hadn't. "You need to," Locke says firmly. "I'm sorry if I'm bossy, but these people will take every dime you have." Seeing good people victimized can take an emotional toll, Locke admits, but she adds, "Most of the time, at the end of the day, I feel really good because we make a difference." Now, this next article, also from the Bulletin, under the heading of Your Health, a shot to the knee. Do any of you have knee problems? Injections are widely used to manage the symptoms of knee osteoarthritis, but do they work? When Carol Porter's knees gave way to osteoarthritis in her late 50s, she started getting injections of hyaluronic acid, HA, gel, every 6 months for the next 10 years. Porter says her knees were fine until one day the injections stopped working. "I couldn't walk 100 feet without terrible pain," said the New York business executive, now 76. Permanent relief ultimately came by way of knee replacements. Los Angeles architect Stephen Elrich, 77, finds that every year or so, an injection of platelet-rich plasma, PRP, into his arthritic left knee provides some relief, enough for him to pursue an active lifestyle of golf, paddle tennis, and heli-skiing. Although Ehrlich's osteoarthritis is moderate, he's relatively pain-free. Kathy Cope had a different experience. After suffering with osteoarthritis in her knees for 20 years, she tried HA injections in 2022. Taken over 2 months, the injections had no effect at all. Cope, 76, a retiree who splits her time between New York and Florida, soon went the knee replacement route. About 1 in 7 people diagnosed with knee osteoarthritis will receive some sort of injection to treat the painful, sometimes debilitating, symptoms of the disease. Yet studies in recent years have found that most of these injections actually do very little to improve osteoarthritis in the knees and are only slightly more effective than a placebo. They are safe with minimal downsides. They may be helpful, and we don't have many other great options, said Scott Rodeo, co-director of the Orthopedic Soft Tissue Research Program at Weill Medical College of Cornell University in New York. But medical organizations have pulled back on their endorsement of knee injections. In its 2021 guidelines, the American Association of Orthopedic Surgeons, AAOS, conditionally recommended the use of one type of injection, corticosteroids, and advised against hyaluronic acid injections. Two other types, PRP and stem cell injections, are not fully approved by the Food and Drug Administration and are regarded as experimental by insurance companies. To help you wade knee-deep through the confusing world of injections, here's a rundown of the most common kinds of shots and what the experts say about them. Corticosteroids, what are they? After weight loss, exercise, and anti-inflammatories, corticosteroids are usually the next option for treating knee pain. These shots are a combination of the steroid cortisone and a numbing agent that is injected into the knee for fast temporary relief during a flare-up. Do they work? Yes. They're regarded as the fire extinguisher of knee injections. They usually start working within 48 hours to reduce pain and inflammation around the knee joint. Studies show corticosteroids can effectively provide short-term relief, though some people report success over a longer period. I've had patients who received injections in their knees every 3 months for several years, said Cara Cipriano, an associate professor of adult reconstruction at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Others feel that over time the effects fade. In these situations, we move on to other treatments. What to know? Corticosteroids are typically administered up to 4 times a year. Although they're relatively safe and effective, overuse may contribute to further deterioration of knee cartilage. People with diabetes or other metabolic conditions should be aware that they may increase blood sugar levels. These injections are covered by Medicare Part B and other insurance plans. Next, we'll look at hyaluronic acid. What is it? It is a natural lubricant that mimics the synovial fluid in a healthy knee joint. Generally given each week for 3 to 5 weeks, HA gel or viscosupplementation acts like a shock absorber that cushions the space around the knee joint and allows the bones to rub against each other with less pain. Does it work? Anecdotally, yes. In his practice, Rodeo, head team physician for the New York Giants, says about 2/3 of his patients with mild to moderate knee osteoarthritis get a few months of relief using HA injections, though it takes a few weeks before they feel an improvement. But as research findings on the effectiveness of HA injections come under scrutiny, medical experts voice a course of skepticism. I don't think hyaluronic acid works at all to improve anything, says Boston University Professor of Medicine David Felsen, who chairs the Osteoarthritis Clinical Trial Network for the Arthritis Foundation. We don't have a lot to offer, so sometimes doctors and patients have been sold a bill of goods. HA only remains in the joint a few days after being injected, at which point it's no longer in the knee. We're not sure if it works or how. The research is not strong, Cipriano says. What to know? HA injections are covered by Medicare and other health plans, but authorization is usually required. Next, we have platelet-rich plasma. What is it? Platelet-rich plasma injections are developed by extracting blood from a person, then separating out the plasma, which is rich in platelets, from other parts through centrifugation. The concentration of platelets in the new mixture can be 5 to 10 times richer than in normal blood. Researchers say the shots promote healing and lessen inflammation, which should reduce pain and swelling. Does it work? Research is ongoing, but several studies have found that PRP to pack a powerful healing punch more effective than HA injections. There is good evidence for the use of PRP, says Kenton Feibel, a non-operative orthopedic sports medicine specialist at Cedars-Sinai Institution in Los Angeles and medical director for the Anaheim Ducks. The injections last about a year and pain and function improve. But not all PRP is equal, cautions Kevin Mautner, a professor at Emory University's Department of Orthopedic Surgery and head team physician for the Atlanta Hawks. Platelets and growth factors in blood fluctuate based on time of day, recent meals, hormones, exercise, and other factors. As a result, the composition of PRP can change day to day, even when it's the same doctor using blood from the same patient. What to know? The Arthritis Foundation recommends that PRP injections be done by a specialist, either an orthopedic surgeon or a sports medicine doctor. Ultrasound imaging is often used to help target the precise point in the joint space to insert the needle for maximum effectiveness. The procedure can be performed as a one-time injection or every week for 3 weeks. Because it's not fully approved by the FDA, It's generally not covered by insurance. A series of injections can cost around $2,000. Then we have stem cell therapy. In this process, stem cells are extracted from bone marrow or fat and then injected into an arthritic knee. Theoretically, the stem cells will promote tissue regeneration in the joint, though laboratory tests have shown that few stem cells survive or remain in the joint after being injected. Does it work? The efficacy of stem cell injections to treat knee osteoarthritis has not been proven. Benefits reported by patients may be the result of anti-inflammatory agents released from the bone marrow or fat. Injection therapies are not aimed at regenerating anything, but rather trying to reduce inflammation and slow the progression of the disease. What to know, the process for harvesting bone marrow for stem cells is carried out in a procedure room, not a doctor's office, which makes it a less accessible treatment. Stem cell injections are expensive and not covered by insurance. An injection usually costs at least $3,000. Which makes it an unaffordable option for many. The decision to try knee injections should be made in concert with a knowledgeable doctor and with the understanding that they may not work. In the next few years, researchers predict that more effective knee injections and effective regenerative injections will likely be refined or discovered. For now, injections all fit in the might help, won't hurt category. We just need better solutions. Well, with our remaining minute or so, let's look at some more issues about the brain that we may or may not have known. Did you know, like cocaine and heroin, nicotine activates the brain's dopamine systems? Did you know that a study found that playing with dogs increased levels of joy-inducing hormones? I would think cats count, too. Did you know that emotions help memories form and stick? Did you know that learning that a loved one is in pain activates the same brain circuits as experiencing pain yourself? Did you know that oxytocin is a hormone in the brain that helps regulate caution and anxiety? Did you know that strong ties to friends and family increase levels of happiness? Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.